The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Hello, children, and welcome again to
Hello There,
the Answer of the Week. My name is Matt Baum. I am one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast.
Hi.
You can find me on the Twitter at Matt Baumstein. Across from me, the other host, his name is Joe Patrick.
Ahoy.
Ahoy there, Joey. You can find him at JoePatrick116 on the Twitter.
Also true.
And when we're not hosting the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast, we are listening to your answers to the question of the week.
And boy, are there a lot of them.
There is a lot. But we gave him 2 weeks. It's our own damn fault. So,
I guess
we're going to go a little light on our responses so we can let you guys have the show. Otherwise, the show's going to be 2.5 hours long. And I'm not dealing with that.
Not that we're not going to interact. It's just that we're probably going to dial it back a little.
Going to keep it short. Here's how it works. Every week, Joey posts the question on the Two-Headed Nerd forums. You can find them by going to twoheadednerd.com, clicking the forum button, and then you go to the little question of the week section. You can respond there, or you can call us at 402-819-4894, or send us an MP3 to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. You have to keep your answer under 2 minutes, and you have to answer that week's question. That's about the only rules. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Remind me what this question was, Joe.
Oh, if it's a question about a specific thing, like what's your favorite blank?
Yeah. One answer.
One answer.
One answer.
You only got 2 minutes anyway.
Yeah. Go to the forums and write all the rest. But here, one answer.
The question of 2 weeks ago.
There you go.
Came from D. Murray. And essentially, he wanted to know, if you had a span of time, not an infinite span of time, 4 hours or...
Four sittings.
Four one-hour sittings, a plane ride, whatever, to give somebody a definitive example of a comic book that you love. So one story, one miniseries.
Or a character, or a theme.
Yeah, whatever. So we're saying not like the entire run of Garth Ennis's Punisher, because that's many, many years worth.
Too long.
Like one encapsulized bullet of why you love this thing. Boom. What would it be?
Okay. Let's get right into it. Before we do, we're having our definitive cocktail of the week.
It is the definitive THN answer of the week cocktail.
It is the cocktail that started it all. It is the Charro Negro. Ladies and gentlemen, it's like a rum and coke, but it's tequila and coke with a little bit of lime.
Yes.
Excelsior. Charro Negro, Spanish for a black cowboy.
Hello, old friend.
Delicious.
I don't think you put lime in it before.
Yeah. I used to put real lime. This is sweet lime. Let's get right to it. My man, Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn.
Sup, nerds. Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn here. And if I were to recommend, like, one definitive story that I'm not really sure how important the four-hour flight thing is. I guess if you had, like, a four-hour window to read this thing, I guess is the point of that.
We told you why, Anthony.
I'm going to recommend Planetary. Four trades. The main series is four trades. That's a trade an hour. I think that would work. But I would recommend this to just about anybody because, like, you don't need a wealth of knowledge in terms of continuity or character when reading this series. Just a love of fiction, really. It's written by Warren Ellis, drawn by John Cassaday at the peak of his powers. And it's an incredible story. It is a story full of pastiches and homages. And it's not just that. It's not like, hey, spot the pastiche and that's it. I mean, that's certainly fun to do, but Warren Ellis and John Cassaday have created this really rich and interesting world, populated by awesome characters, and that's pretty much it. I'll let the boys talk about it if they want to, but it's awesome and it's one of my faves. So Planetary. All right, bye.
Planetary was awesome, and it was everybody. Everything was there. Tarzan,
Sherlock Holmes, Dracula, Holmes,
Godzilla,
Doc Samson.
I mean, like, everybody's there. And then even like
Doc Savage, not Doc Savage,
yeah. Even like Superman and Green Lantern and the Hulk,
Fu Manchu
type characters were there. They were. It was like almost every piece of popular fiction you could think of written in the secret history of the Earth, and these three characters that worked for the Planetary group were rediscovering. They were called secret archaeologists.
Yes.
Oh man, it was so good. I would say maybe a definitive Warren Ellis read.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love Planetary very much.
Good call, Anthony. Thank you, brother.
moving right along because we don't have time. Jeffrey, gotta catch them all.
Greetings, two-headed nerd. It's JD, gotta catch them all, your Ronin Poke Trainer, emailing in for my answer of the week.
He has no master.
The question was one definitive story to recommend to a new reader. Well, seeing the negative reviews of the recent X-Men movie, I gotta redeem that franchise and say Joss Whedon and John Cassaday's X-Men, Astonishing X-Men.
Two votes for John Cassaday right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Are perfect. They exist just outside of continuity and give you everything you need to know about all of the characters, and not to mention the art. The art's fantastic, and I think it's the last time Cassaday's looked decent in a while. But no, Whedon's X-Men, my answer, hands down. Cheers, nerds.
Great answer, and probably the last time we saw Colossus do anything cool. It's been a long time since he's done anything with that character. One of my favorite X-Men. I miss him dearly. Why does no one want to write Colossus?
I don't agree that it's perfect. I think it has some weird...
It had some problems.
Yeah, but I do think that the character work is perfect. The characterizations of the individual X-Men, mwah. That's what really Whedon is good for.
They were going to bring back that Kitty Colossus relationship that everyone loves, and for some reason, Marvel just won't let us have it. I don't know why.
That's because...
Why?
The fans... This is a hard thing for fans to grasp. You can't always get what you want.
Oh, come on.
When you get what you want, you end up resenting it and ends up getting boring.
Oh, please. Oh, yeah, you like her with Star-Lord better? Come on.
I mean, no, that's just dumb.
Randy Andrews, you're up next. Take it away, buddy.
Thanks, Jeff.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week, you asked about definitive stories we would read on, say, a four-hour flight. Well, guys, my answer shouldn't come as no surprise when I tell you to read the initial 7-issue run of Danger Girl in the Ultimate Collection. It has the perfect blend of action, adventure, romance, and danger. I recommend it because it's such a fun read, and the art is awesome to look at. Well, that's my answer this week, guys. Hope you liked it. Sorry about the last 2 weeks. Darwin Cook is now on my radar, and now I can read more of his work.
The band is playing him off.
if I did, it would be the Gen 13 symbol. And also, my music this week is from James Bond. It's the medley theme. And so, check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net, and see you in a week. Bye for now.
Watch those audio levels, Randy. They'll bite you.
You know what? Listen, Randy is normally very professional when it comes to all that. Just an off week.
And hey,
the music is a little louder than he expected.
And I get it, man. Life gets in the way. What can you do, right?
But hey.
Danger Girl, he loves it. The first...
we all knew it.
Yeah. Not a big shock, but that's fine.
Hey, look, I read those Danger Girl books. That's
fine.
You've got Captain Nancy. I forget his name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
It's not Captain Nancy. And it's not Baron Blitzkrieg because that's an All-Star Squadron villain.
Wow. Somebody bad. I know that.
Yeah,
he's bad. Bad news. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the Google Voice line for our first call. Nope. That is someone that introduced the show last week. This Google Voice.
Oh, yeah. We can unflag that one.
Chase Magnet calling the Google Voice line. Take it away, Chase.
Hey there, Joe and Matt. This is Chase Magnet calling from Washington, D.C. And I'm sound a little bit less prepared this week because I'm almost all packed up, meaning I don't have a fancy mic or program to work with, just my telephone. Luckily, for this week's question, I know my answer by heart. If someone asked me for a truly definitive comic book, I'd give them one that's definitive on three fronts. For a character, for its creators, and for me as a comics reader. That comic is All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. First of all, Superman's not just my favorite superhero, but he's my favorite comics character. I've said before that while gods receive their powers from us believing in them, Superman's so powerful and so meaningful to me because he believes in us. He's a truly good icon that doesn't need to be cool or deconstructed. He just works. He's the formula for the superhero genre. He's the alpha and the omega. He's an idea entirely based in love. And no matter which relationship you examine in the comic, whether it's with his parents, Lois Lane, his best pal Jimmy Olsen, his archenemy Lex Luthor, or a stranger named Reagan, each interaction is defined by love, and there's no better representation of Superman than that. Second, for Morrison and Quietly, they're two creators that are at their absolute best when together, like chocolate and peanut butter. And All-Star Superman is a work that combines Morrison's love of superheroes, his brilliance as a comic storyteller, and the appeal of his metatextual stories and general weirdness. It manages to be both digestible and wonderfully complex. And this story is peak Quietly. It just has these incredible designs, layouts, and these unforgettable, inimitable moments. It just shows how much of a master of the medium and the genre of man is. It just doesn't get better than Frank Quietly and All-Star Superman. And finally, for me, well, it combines my love of Superman and his philosophy towards the world, along with my love of comics as both an enjoyable and incredibly complex medium. All-Star Superman is a comic I could talk about for hours, and I absolutely will, but 2 minutes are almost up. So I got to get back to packing, and I'll see you nerds soon.
Get your butt home, Chase.
He's back.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, because remember, this was last week.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. We're 2 weeks behind. All-Star Superman.
Of course.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If everybody answered that, I would just say, you know what? This was a bad question because that is one of the best comic book stories ever told. It's a good answer. Thank you very much, Chase. Good to hear from you. Let's go to D. Murray.
I hope Stony D makes an appearance.
Oh, yeah, I hope so.
Hey, man.
Oh, hey, bro.
How's it going, dude? It's me again. Got one question for you if you got the time. Always out of time for you. What's the question? Well, I got a 4-hour flight. I'm going to Cincinnati. I need to know what's one good story for me to read while I'm on the flight. I'm going to be drinking some booze. I'm going to be smoking up before I get on the flight. So I'm going to be pretty stable. Got like a lot of room to put some stories inside of it. What do you got for me? Well, you said you read Kingdom Come before. Have you read The Kingdom or Thy Kingdom Come? No, what is that? Well, The Kingdom is a sequel to Kingdom Come, and Thy Kingdom Come is kind of an alternate story that plays off Kingdom Come. Dude, that sounds awesome. Haven't got to the good part yet. It's written by Jeff John, and the art is done by Del Ingerson. And this story is just so good because it shows us Kingdom Come Superman coming to the Pre-52 universe. And he's kind of like a fish out of water. He wants to get back home. He doesn't know how because his Earth is supposed to be gone. And you read this story, and it's so good. It plays off all the different characters of the JSA. Because that's what it's the story of, the JSA. And the ending of the story has an ending of Kingdom Come inside of it, and it's done by no other than Alex Ross. Dude, that sounds awesome. Yeah, it's about 23 issues. You should definitely go pick it up. I'm pretty sure that'd be your entire flight reading those trades. Die Kingdom Come. All right, dude, I'm going to pick those up. I'm going to take off. I'm going to tell you what I think about them when I see you again. Yeah, I appreciate that. Enjoy your flight, man. Oh, I will.
Stony D all pumped up to go to Cincy. I love it. Thy Kingdom Come. I don't remember it.
It was in Justice Society of America.
Oh, okay.
That's what he was referring to, right?
Okay, I think so.
Where Kingdom Come Superman appeared in the regular DC universe and joined the team for a while. And then they eventually had a moment where they addressed that and where he came from. And yeah, and Alex Ross did some of the art. It's great.
Oh, I do remember that.
It's from the relaunched JS, yes. Where it was relaunched, yes, as Justice Society of America.
Yes, I do remember that. That was really good. Good answer. I thought he was talking about those limited series Kingdom Come, The Kingdom, they did after
that. No, that's the sequel. Stony D gets corrected about that in the call, if you were paying attention.
Okay. I did not like those.
I like them. That's where Hyper Time came from.
Son of Batman and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it was essentially like Damien before Damien.
Yeah, more or less.
Except he was much more like Ra's al Ghul,
right?
Suave.
And he was a bad guy, right?
No, he wasn't a bad guy, but he wasn't like a costume superhero either.
Okay. Thank you for your call, D. And always good to hear from Stony D. Stony D, let us know what you thought of it after you read it. I'm curious. Some meta stuff there, see? Back to the Google Voice Line! It's Brian DuPont. He's been doing better.
Hey, good afternoon, Joe and Matt. This is Brian DuPont calling in my answer to the question of the week. If I would recommend a story arc to somebody to sit down and just to read, I would have to go with Francis Manapul's The Flash, Volume 1, I think it's called Move Forward. And I mean, that was way back in 2011 at the launch of the New 52. And prior to that, the only experience I had with Barry Allen, the Flash, was through Blackest Night. And I really liked how his character was developed. So it got me hooked into Francis Manapul's. But the thing I really liked about the move forward was Manapul was introducing the new idea that the Flash can start thinking as fast as he can move. And there was a really cool spread where the Flash sees the situation where somebody was robbing somebody on the street. And in that one page, he just visualizes all the possibilities that he could have. You know, if he ran and intercepted this person, and then this car accident might happen, and then it will hurt a kid or something like that. And so he runs through all the possible scenarios that he could before he figures out this is the best one to do, all within, you know, microseconds. And I think that was a really cool way to start explaining how the Flash can start thinking as fast as he can run. And that was pretty cool. I think, too, there was a, maybe in the first issue or the second issue, at the very end of the issue, there was a gun at Barry's head, and it goes off, and you see him dead. And I was like, there's no way they would have killed him off that fast. I know, DC was getting rid of a lot of their New 52, but they wouldn't do that. But the next issue, you see that he, you know, Barry Allen talks about how his reflexes respond.
2 minutes. There we go. Francis Manapul's Flash.
I mean, I didn't keep up with the Flash after they relaunched it.
Yeah.
And Manapul was the writer. Manapul and Brian Buccolato.
Yeah.
Were the co-writers on it. It's like, it was fine and everything. And the art was gorgeous, but I just couldn't, I didn't stay invested. But Brian was right. They did introduce that element where he's not just running fast. He's not, his legs aren't just moving fast, but his brain is moving fast. And so he is working out all these probabilities of every unique scenario before he makes right. any action, but it's all in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, no, that was really cool. I like
and
that.
I like that. I like that thought. Jeff Johns did something kind of similar before the New 52 reboot when the Flash was relaunched again around Brightest Day.
Right.
Where he was able to assemble and disassemble and reassemble a car in midair.
Yeah.
Which is stretching it a little bit.
Well, yeah, because you mean like,
you, for one thing, you don't have super strength or the Flash
or super tools.
Yes, but I'll buy the fact that you were able to read a book about cars. You were able to learn everything you could about cars and even take it apart.
Sure. But like every time he goes to get like everybody pizza or something, I'm like, okay, when did he order those pizzas?
They had to make those pizzas,
yeah,
man.
They still had
where'd
to
they
make
come from?
The pizzas. Unless yeah. you just went and stole a bunch of pizza.
Like orders that were ready to go out the door.
Right,
and they like
yoink!
They felt a brush of air on their yeah. backs of their necks, and they turn around and they're like, ah, all pizzas are gone.
Damn it, the Flash stole a pizza again.
That's funny.
Great call. Good to hear from you, Brian DuPont, creator of Pecos Bill, with special variant covers by our very own Joe Patrick.
This guy, I don't know if you can get him anymore. I tried to find him on his online.
Sold out. You're going for a load on eBay, man. Jeez.
If only. If only. I should have gotten my royalty structure worked out.
Let's go to the Warbringer. He says, I'm not allowed to pigeonhole him. He can tell dad jokes if he wants, and he has a new joke for Joe Patrick. You want to read it? Or you want me to read it to you?
Ooh, I want to read it.
Okay. It's cuter when you read it.
A bear and a rabbit are taking a shit in the woods. The bear. I love it already.
Okay.
The bear turns to the rabbit.
The guy loves poop jokes.
And asks if he has trouble with sticking to his fur. The rabbit says no. So the bear wiped his ass with the rabbit.
Spadum-bum. Hey.
That's not really a dad joke because I wouldn't really say that to my kid.
It's a total dad joke. Yeah. My dad told me that.
Maybe one. If my kid was a teenager.
What's
I'd
up,
say
nerds?
It.
It's me, Tom the Warbringer, answering your question of the week. This week, what would we hand to somebody that had some time to read, and what is the quintessential story or arc or single issue comic for said hero? My answer is simple. It's the first two volumes of Batman New 52. I mean, Scott Snyder, I mean, he's basically required reading now. That was hard to spit out. I mean, Court of Owls, Night of Owls. I mean, he created the Talons, oddly enough, because that's my name. Created the Talons. He created the Court of Owls. And, I mean, he added a new villain to Batman. But, I mean, he added this whole backdrop to Gotham that's been felt through all other types of media, even in Gotham from this last season, which I just heard because I don't watch that show because it's garbage. But no, I mean, he's he's the man. When people ask me about Batman and what they should be reading, I hand them volume one, and then they basically kick down my door and ask for volume two. It's just so perfect, and I've read it so many times. I mean, it's one of all my paperbacks, those two, I mean, they're ratty. They're bent. They're read. They're well-read, and I love them. But that's my answer. And if you think I'm wrong, then you're more wrong than I am. But anyway, I'll talk to you guys later.
That's a nice way to say that.
I mean, that's a polite way to phrase it, yeah.
Yeah, Snyder's Batman. We were just talking about it on the show this week. It's excellent stuff. Yep. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's one of the new 52 books that Joe Patrick's going to miss.
One of the best.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, War Ringer. Good to hear from you. And thank you for the dad joke. You're right. I shouldn't be pigeonholing anyone. So there. Looks like we got a call from The Bachelor. Let's see who he's making out with this week.
Hey, Joe and Matt, it's your favorite THN Bachelor, Chris Backelder here, calling in for the question of the week. Listen, I'm a little occupied right now. I'm taking the beautiful new Green Lantern Jessica Cruz out on a walk downtown Omaha.
She is hot.
And we both kind of agree that it's a little absurd that it took this long for a human woman to be brought into the Green Lantern Corps. I mean, they can make room for a giant piece of broccoli, but no. We have a woman now. It's cool. Man, I swear to God, it's too much history and not enough of her story. Am I right, guys?
Yuck. There are other female Green Lanterns, yeah, just not from Earth.
I just wanted to let you know my definitive run for anyone to read is easily I Kill Giants. It's the first thing I ever called in for you guys, and it's honestly, it's my favorite comic. Period. I don't know how to really describe it. It's just such a great story. If you haven't read I Kill Giants yet and you want to take a little feels trip, please, you know, check it out at Legend Comics and Coffee. And if you don't like it, you know what? Have them get a hold of me. Maybe I'll reimburse you. I loved it, though. So, yeah, there you go. I Kill Giants. Enjoy, guys.
I think I Kill Giants is a great comic to hand to somebody who doesn't know what comics can actually do.
Sure.
Like someone who's like, well, I mean, comics are for kids or whatever. Hand them I Kill Giants and then watch them cry like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a definitive way to show people that comics are much more adult and intelligent than you think. Very good answer.
100% agree.
The Bachelor. Amy Batter hits us with her definitive story and she says, it's a lady. Break out the Courvoisier.
Break out the Courvoisier. Oh, hello there.
And then there's a picture of Batman punching Superman. It just says Batman with an apostrophe.
Hey there, nerds. Amy ND calling in for the definitive story question of the week. I know it's been a while since I called, so I guess I qualify as one of those lapsed regulars Joe called out on the forum.
Yeah!
One of the only rare and elusive females that can break up this dorky sausage fest once in a while that Matt likes to provoke. So anyway, here I am, and if I had a friend with a four-hour flight, I would give them Batman Hush by Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee. The book, it's beautiful. I think it's Jim Lee's best work in the 2000s. Stunning colors by Alex Sinclair. But it's also a fairly simple Batman story. You can read it as a standalone without having to know what was going on in every other part of the DCU in 2003. So it's nice. It's kind of a jumping on point. Hush isn't exactly an A-list rogue, but you get a pretty good backstory on Tommy Elliott. And also, it has a pretty impressive cast of rogues aside from the titular character. Catwoman shows up, Killer Croc's in it, Poison Ivy, Joker and Harley Quinn. And also it features some lesser used allies like Leslie Tompkins and Huntress. That's a lot of points in Batman Trivial Pursuit from one story, and hopefully enough of a glimpse at the Bat universe that my friend would want to grab some more comics. So that's my answer, Hush. It was one of the first DC trades I read when I got into comics, and it's still one of my favorite Batman stories, though. If we're sticking with the four-hour flight thing, I think in a binge scenario, you could blow through Hush in about 2 hours. So maybe I'd pair it with something like The Long Halloween, or yeah, All-Star Superman, or Chuck Dixon's Nightwing Year One.
Whoa.
As long as my friend knows that Grayson is my comics boyfriend and I don't share well.
Woo!
Till next time, nerds.
Hey! Amy Derlin, good to hear from you.
All right.
It's hard to understand everything she's saying with that thick North Dakota accent. But
yeah, boy, it's so thick.
Man, you know, they just talk differently up there. What could you do?
Gosh.
Hush, we both had some issues with Hush, but I will say that it as a whole read, it is a fun, superstar, creative team Batman story.
I think it's a satisfying romp through the Batman mythos.
Absolutely. And there's something very early 2000s feel to it.
I think Hush suffers from maybe some sort of last minute editorial meddling.
I think so, too.
Because if you look back at Hush, they reveal before the end of the story that Hush is Jason Todd.
Yeah.
And then maybe an issue or two later, they're like, just kidding, that was Clayface.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like a dun, dun, dun. Yeah. It was just sort of like, oh, yeah, that was Clayface.
Yeah, right. And then they shoehorn in this Tommy Elliott nonsense, which may have been Jeff Loeb's plan from the start.
Could have been.
But then you look at what immediately followed Hush, which was Judd Winnick's run,
right,
where he actually brought Jason Todd back from the dead.
Yeah.
And so it makes me think that like somebody along the chain at DC went, oh, shit, that idea is way too good.
Right. Like, okay. Let's just steer it gently away from there.
Yeah.
We're going to use that next term, you know.
But I agree. It hits all the right marks. It pushes all the buttons.
And
it's
this
got
is
beautiful
before
art.
Jim Lee was completely overdoing his art. It's still just like beautiful Jim Lee Batman art. It really is. Great looking book.
Now, for my money, if I were to pick one of Amy's choices, it would be Long Halloween, because it does all the same things.
Sure.
It hits all the right marks, but it's also tonally a noir Batman detective murder mystery.
And Tim Sale's drawing it. That doesn't hurt at all. Love that guy.
Jim, yeah.
Thank you, Amy.
Great
choice.
Good
to hear from you.
If your erection lasts more than 4 hours, call more ladies. It's my favorite line from the Ladies Man.
Let's go to Jim Kettnerd. Check in. And this little punk, I'll tell you what, these kids skateboarding.
He's the one that pointed out to me it's a milestone episode.
So, one definitive run. This is such a Goldilocks kind of question.
Pixies in the background?
It can't be anything too big. It can't be too small. It should be self-contained and say pretty much everything there is to say about a character, story, or world. And it shouldn't rely too heavily on some outside continuity or superhero lore. No, this is a book that you should be able to come to cold and leave feeling like it's one of your favorites. Most importantly, it should be good enough that you would want to read it again, and a book that would get better and better each time you read it. The answer is Bone by Jeff Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Bone is one of the masterworks in the whole comic book medium, and Joe Patrick, you really should finish it. It's a story that can resonate with anyone and everyone.
You're not my dad!
Indie comic snobs who picked it up during the original self-published run, or grade schoolers who caught on through Scholastic books. It's a book that blends action and comedy and drama and mythology, and most of all, heart. The artwork is crisp and expressive. The visual storytelling is some of the best I've ever read. Jeff Smith draws some of the best chase scenes that have ever been committed to a page. And really, I could keep going on and on about what makes it so great, but instead, I'm gonna tell you about my friend Josh. See, back in my old punk house days, I used to leave graphic novels in the bathroom in hopes of getting my roommates hooked on my geeky bullshit.
Gross.
But I know this isn't quite the 4-hour flight scenario, but my buddy Josh read all of Bone, all 1,332 pages of it, in the course of 3 or 4 visits to the bathroom. And he loved it so much that the next week
he
got two ginormous tattoos of Bone running away from the stupid rat creatures on his ribs. Any comic that can get you to commit that fast has got to be a serious contender for one of the all-time greats. Anyways, if you want to hear more from me, you can check out my podcasts, Adult Crash and Galacticus on iTunes, and my comics and illustrations at Kettner.com. Thanks, guys.
Your bones got a 1,000 pages sounds daunting, but Bone reads very quickly. It really does. You will burn through it. Absolutely burn through it. I read all of Bone in about a week, and probably about 4 sittings, I would say. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Shame on Joe Patrick. Let's all digitally point at him and scream shame and ring our shame bells for not finishing.
Look, I'm not taking my clothes off and walking down 50th Street, no matter how much you want me to.
Throw pug poop at you the whole time. It's going to be disgusting.
Shame. Shame.
Good to hear from you, Jim. That is an excellent pick. Let's go back to the Google Voice.
What's up, Two-Headed Nerd? This is Chase from Florida calling in about the one definitive story question of the week. I am a first-time caller, if you're guessing. So I guess my best answer would have to be Batman Year One. I know it's probably one that's super popular for people, but I think about times when I had friends that were mildly interested in comics and superhero comics in general, and that was the one I would always recommend to them, and they were immediately drawn into Batman, or immediately just drawn into the medium of comics in general. I mean, and honestly, just kind of happy to not be with that David Mazzucchelli art. And, you know, Frank Miller just really kind of redefining the Batman character for years and years to come. But here's my answer. That might be a little bit short for a four-hour flight, but either way, I think it would get the job done. All right. Hopefully, I'll call in with some more, and see you guys around. Thanks. Bye.
Chase, welcome aboard, welcome brother. Aboard.
Like, you don't have to have it last the entire 4 hours. No, no, no. It just has to be something you can read in 4 hours.
Absolutely. Chase, great answer, by the way. Batman Year One.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We can only have one Chase, though. So you're going to have to call back next week so you can earn your nickname. We'll think on it. We'll think on it.
We'll have to workshop that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got some ideas. They're sort of like interstate name driven, but we'll see. Batman Year One, it's a good answer. Welcome aboard. Nice to hear a new caller. Right now, let's go to one of our favorite stalwart callers. Mr. Jesse Kiefer, get us back on track, will you?
Hey, Joe and Matt, it's Kiefer, emailing in with my answer to the question of the week. Super hard to narrow this one down. So, the book that I've literally lent out the most would probably be Superman Red Son, which would be a perfectly acceptable answer to this question. But it's not my answer.
Whoa.
Because if you've been stuck on a 4-hour flight and you're looking for a book that defines what's possible in a graphic novel format, I've got to give my vote to Mouse by Art Spiegelman. And I say that because I think it's a book that everyone should read at least once. It's such a powerful example of how to use comics to convey biography, and in a way that's just groundbreaking. Even though the characters are turned into anthropomorphic animals, that does not make it any less honest or raw. So it's not for the meek. And it's not something I'd recommend every day. But if you're looking for that one poignant work, which really sums up the powerful potential of the medium, well, for me, it's gotta be Mouse. If you haven't read it, you should. I just hope that on this hypothetical 4-hour flight, you don't have to sit next to anybody, because it's not a tale that you'll get out of unscathed. So just prepare for some turbulence. All right, Mouse is my answer, gents. If you want to hear some more of my comic musings, we did an episode of the Grolix podcast on Mouse about a year ago, and you can find that at GrolixPodcast.com. Thanks, guys, and have a great week.
Mouse, man. Oof. Heavy stuff.
It's a
heavy stuff.
It's and a butt punch.
One of those things where you tell people about it and they're like, are you serious? Like, it's mice playing Jews in World War II? But it works. Man, it was heavy. Good answer, Jesse. Although I'm used to him like keeping it so lighthearted. You know, I wasn't ready for Jesse Kiefer to hit us with the a hard one.
He is a complicated man and one understands him
except his woman.
But his woman.
That's right. Let's go back to our Google voice line.
We might need more cocktails.
It's Zach Hollowell.
We got so many freaking calls.
I guarantee he's calling us from the toilet.
Good morning, nerds. This is Zach Hollowell, regular caller, calling in. Hi, listeners. I'm calling in for the answer of the week. Recently, my dad was in town, and this is a story about how I failed at this, actually. I had sent my brother a copy of The First Preacher Collected, and my dad saw it, picked it up, and I guess he hated it. But then he was sitting on my couch, and I have to say, hey, have you seen this? And I brought up Preacher on TV, and he loved it. So that's an example of when I failed. If I had to do it again, and my dad, I guess he wouldn't like this book, but generally for people, I would really suggest Sandman Seasons of the Mist. It's my favorite Sandman story. Mm-hmm. It's really good. It gives you a great idea of, you know, the Endless, gives you a great kind of encompassing of his powers through it. But it's just a really great story. People will see it and see that Lucifer is really a much cooler character than that terrible TV show makes him out to be. Really great. You know, I'd be tempted to give him the first book. And as much as I like Sam Keith's art, I don't feel that story was really indicative of what they were really trying to go with past that. You know, Game of You is really good, but I think it's a little too complex maybe for a casual reader. But I think this is a story where they can get a good feel of what's going on and, you know, try to deal with it. So that's my answer. I'll call in again sometime. Talk to you boys later. Bye.
Good to hear from you, Zach. I don't hate the Preacher show.
I think it's great.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I mean, is it different? Yes.
But we knew it would be.
It's arguably different.
We knew it would be.
Yeah, but I do think it's a lot of fun.
Look at my jeans.
And you didn't
beeps.
Do anything wrong. I mean, you did your best. You know, different strokes, different folks. Not everybody's going to like everything you throw at them. That's just how it goes, man.
And you're right, Lucifer is terrible, but Preacher, it's not too bad. Zach, good to hear from you. Thank you for not calling from the toilet, unless you're on the toilet and you just didn't tell us. I appreciate it. Regardless, it's time to head up.
I mean, I kind of like the heads up.
Yeah, at least we know what's going on. There's something to be said for that. And when he says regular caller, he's not kidding.
Hey, in more ways than one.
Very regular.
Ayo!
Unlike Kettner's buddy who needs some more fiber in his diet.
It's like, I don't care who you are. Four toilet sittings is not enough time to read Bone.
1,000 pages plus? Good Lord.
250 pages per sitting.
All right, let's go to the Orca.
Orca here. Good thing I had 2 weeks on this one. It's a toughie. I've gone through so many answers and ruled them out for one reason or another. Watchmen's the obvious answer, but that's kind of jumping into the deep end of the pool. If this was Scotch, that would be something really peaty, like Ardbeg. It takes a lot of drinking of other Scotch to finally appreciate. Kingdom Come's a favorite, but very dark and too many inside references, like a Talisker, if you will. Classic Spidey stuff could work, maybe McFarlane's run. That's kind of like old Pulteney. Nuanced, timeless, but a little predictable. Saga would be the Octomore. Totally whacked out and different, the absolute best. If you're into that. We need the comics version of a Macallan 18. Agreed upon by all that it's fantastic, but also something that could be enjoyed by a newcomer. I present to you Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross's Marvels. As opposed to Astro City, their later collaboration, which is too big and too spotty for consideration here, Marvels tells a wonderful series of stories that acts as a foundation of the Marvel Universe for new readers. It makes it reasonable to love superheroes. It's a timepiece, which helps it to avoid ever being dated, and it captivates the reader the entire time. The art? Wow! Alex Ross might have gotten better as his career progressed, but never again did he use the brightness and colors the way he did here. This series is a little short for 4 hours. It's just four large issues. But that last hour, you can just study the panels and bask in the afterglow. Kiss, kiss, boys.
Took my answer.
Really?
Yeah, I was going to say Marvels. I loved those books.
You know, Marvels is wonderful.
Man, those are great. Let's go back to our man on the street. I jumped out of order. I apologize, Damon.
Hey, guys. Damon from Brooklyn calling in from the mean streets of Manhattan again to give you my answer to the question of the week regarding recommended series, miniseries to a person who has a lot of time to kill on their hands. My answer involves a character who will be getting his own movie later this year, starring, as Joe likes to call him, Benedict Cumberbatch. Of course, I'm talking about Doctor Strange, and the series I'm recommending is The Oath, which was written by Brian K. Vaughan, I think, in about 2006 or so. But anyway, the story basically involves Strange trying to find a cure for Wong, who's his bodyguard slash manservant. And he does find a cure, but not only is it, it turns out that cure will cure Wong's cancer, it actually can cure every disease on Earth. And it makes him the unwitting target of Timely Pharmaceutical, who really doesn't want this to be released because, let's face it, they'll go out of business really quickly. But the great thing about it is Ryan K. Vaughan's writing and his grasp on the character. He introduces Night Nurse pretty early in the story, and she kind of acts as like the, I guess, a straight woman to this insanity of, you know, Doctor Strange's normal mystical world. And actually, a lot of the writing actually takes some time, a fairly satirical little bite to some of the dialogue. But the one thing I really love about it, it shows the great character development of Strange. There's a lot of flashbacks to when, before he became Sorcerer Supreme, and he was just really an egotistical prick who didn't study medicine to save people. He really did it just to stoke his own ego. And it's, by the end of the series, it shows how far he's come. I mean, he was willing to sacrifice himself to save all of humanity. You know, I guess really upholding that Hippocratic oath. Anyway, Doctor Strange's Oath, highly recommended. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Oath was great. Brian K. Vaughan's Doc Strange series. Man, that was good.
I love that book.
Although the whole thing, there's this whole conspiracy theory. There was like, well, yeah, big drug companies don't want them to cure cancer because they'll be out of cash. They could still sell the cure to cancer. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but this was more than just an evil pharmaceutical company.
I know,
running the pharmaceutical company was like worshiping Dormammu or something.
It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes beyond that. Great book.
Marcos Martin art.
Oh, man.
Scrumptious.
Good to hear from you, Damon.
Scrumptious.
Yeah, that is really good Doc Strange reading. I would I would definitely throw that at somebody, especially with the movie coming.
Definitely.
Let's go to Jason Sexier. Love this guy. Smartest guy in the room, Jason Sexier.
He's got an answer that I think will surprise many people.
Hey, guys. Jason Sachs. My definitive choice is Joe Casey and Jose Ledron's run on Cable, which ran from approximately Cable 51 to Cable 70. I'm not a big fan of Marvel's Merry Mutants. They actually kind of annoy the hell out of me, to be honest. Too many characters, too much posing, too many ridiculous crossover storylines. But this run by Ledron and Casey is fantastic. What they do is they move Cable away from the Marvel mutant Merry universe and into his own world where he becomes his own person, this strange cybernetic guy from the future, becomes a fully fleshed person with a romantic interest, with some wonderful issues in which he does literally nothing but sit in the coffee shop and talk with her, and then other issues where he has these amazing titanic battles. There's a wonderful long building storyline where Cable confronts Apocalypse, and there's another wonderful storyline where Cable is being hunted by S.H.I.E.L.D., and they have these wonderful series of battles. Best of all, for me, Jose Ledron's art is just spectacular. It starts out with this really strong Jack Kirby influence and looks wonderful, and evolves into this really bizarre mix between Kirby and Mobius that's just transcendent and wild and weird and awesome. You know, those are words I could use for you guys, too. See you later. Bye.
Some bitch.
Come on.
Yeah.
Let me get his blush.
Man.
I loved
that's
that
a good,
Cable story.
That's a really good run.
And I loved Jose Ledron. My only bitch with the guy is he doesn't draw enough stuff.
Well, he does some stuff, but it's stuff that we don't normally,
he does
on
like
our radar.
Covers for Elephant Men and stuff like that. But like, even in that, he doesn't do full stories usually. I mean,
man,
I wish that guy worked more.
I love Jose Ledron.
I do too.
My favorite comic that I ever owned drawn by Jose Ledron was Spider-Boy Team-Up, which was from the second year of Amalgam Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was this just bonkers homage to the Legion of Superheroes. But instead of the Legion of Superheroes, because this is Amalgam, it was the Legion of Galactic Guardians 2099.
Oh, boy.
And so it was a matchup between the Guardians of the Galaxy and the Legion of Superheroes, but somehow set in 2099.
Sure.
And the timeline kept resetting. Because they were making fun of the way that the Legion of Superheroes keeps getting rebooted over and over.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So it started off with these like very sweet 60s style versions of Amalgam Legionnaires, and then they'd reboot and they'd be slightly grittier.
Get meaner and meaner.
And they would reboot, and then it was the 5 years later Legion where they didn't wear costumes. It was all sociopolitical. And then they'd reboot again, and it was dark and gritty. It's amazing. And great Ledron draws that issue. It's just one issue. Carl Kelso writes it. It's awesome.
Yeah, Joe Casey's Cable, though. That whole run was fun.
Yeah,
I
love
that
run
a lot.
They really played up the whole Ascani thing and his connection to that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Blacksmith came back. I love that character. He's so weird. It's like E.T.
Blacksmith, yeah.
Good to hear from you, Sexier. Love you, buddy. But we are now. We got to head down to the swamps of Louisiana. Checking our friend, Crawdad Cody.
Hey guys, it's your Crawdad Cody from Louisiana. I'm calling in for the answer of the week. I believe this one is Definitive Stories. And if it is, I'm going to have to go with something I recently read, and it's going to be Preacher, Volume 1 and 2. And I actually include the first issue of Volume 3, the one featuring Jesse's dad. I just read it recently, and it was amazing. Like, I think so in 4 hours, someone could read Volume 1, understand the characters, and then Volume 2 just takes it up a notch, and you fall in love with characters. You freak out over characters. Volume 2 is probably one of my favorite stories of all time. Like, it is incredible. The story of Jesse and how he goes back home and everything that happens is just beautiful. I'm so glad I'm reading the series now. The TV show is interesting, I guess. I don't know. I kind of wish they would stuck more to the comic. But yeah, that's my answer, guys. Y'all have a good one.
It's becoming a popular theme. Which, I mean, but I get it.
That's the stuff that, that's the stuff that I felt seemed missing from the Preacher show.
And maybe it's coming.
And maybe it is coming.
Yeah.
But the whole thing with his family in Anvil and the motivations for why he's a preacher and the stuff with his dad. Huh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you can do a preacher story and not at least touch on that.
I have a feeling we'll get there.
So hopefully.
I have a feeling we'll get there. That's pretty important stuff. Thank you for your call, Crawdad Cody. I heard his father wants to use him for alligator bait. Damn. That's from a song. His daddy used him from alligator bait.
Okay, great.
Way down in the Louisiana swamp. Amos Moses is the name of the song I'm trying to think of. Stephen Fino. We haven't heard from this guy for a while. I've been wondering about our bank account, our holdings, if you will.
He might be embezzling out there.
Hello again, this is Lord Stephen, Master of Coins, sending in my answer to the question of the week. So originally, I was intending on sending this question out as I couldn't think of a good story that I consider as my definitive pick for a character. However, earlier today, I had a sudden flash of inspiration, and I knew my answer just right away. So John Constantine is one of my favorite comic book characters, and I don't think any story arc sums up who he is as a character better than Dangerous Habits, the first arc in Garth Ennis' run on the series. I don't want to spoil what happens in the arc, but the gist of it is that John is diagnosed with lung cancer and has to use all of his skills as both a con artist and a magician to find a way out of things. The second issue of the arc is by far my favorite issue of Hellblazer, and it shows John meeting up with a friend who sold his soul for the perfect booze, and John has to find a way to save him in his own particular way. So this story arc pretty much shows everything you need to know about the character of John, still acting like a complete and utter bastard, but still showing that he is loyal to his friends and that he does want to do the right thing despite all of his faults. So Hellblazer, Dangerous Habits is my answer for this week's question.
Whoa. We lost him in the end there. Hellblazer, Dangerous Habits.
Wonderful.
Yeah, really.
And the way he gets out of it, brilliant. I heard all the twangy harpsichord music and I thought, oh, Sherlock theme, but of course, the Constantine theme.
Oof. I would argue probably easily the best Constantine story.
It's up there for sure.
Yeah. On my top five, I might be number one. I don't know. That's pretty good.
Fun fact, I bought a bunch of, when I was, when I'd gotten out on my own as a young bachelor out on the town, in my first apartment and everything, I went a little nuts, picking up things.
Yeah, you're having sex with everybody back then.
I was nailing honeys left and right.
Not just honeys.
Look, hey. It was the 90s. What do you want? It wasn't the 90s. I was getting into comic series that I knew that I needed to be reading, but
was scared of.
I just didn't have the money, or for whatever reason, I hadn't gotten into them. Astro City, Bone. This is when I experienced Preacher for the first time. Strangers in Paradise. Sandman, all of these classic runs that were still going. Some of them were still going, but about to wind up. Some of them had been over for years.
Right.
One of them was Hellblazer, and I had bought a bunch of Hellblazer trades, starting with the Garth Ennis stuff and going upwards. And my copy of Dangerous Habits that I bought from a reputable retailer, this is off the factory printing press, had many, many pages printed, are bound into the book upside down.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it was
nice quality control,
special treat. So yeah, that story
like
was
reading
not
manga
as,
and flip the book upside down.
Right.
And then,
yeah.
You know,
that's kind of what I had to do. That story wasn't as interesting as it was in my head, but yeah. So when I first read Hellblazer, half the stuff was printed upside down. So.
Hey guys and girls, thank you so much for everybody that called in. Life got in the way this week and I apologize. I don't know if you've heard, and I don't know why you would, because I don't share my personal life very often. I'm opening a restaurant and I'm super stressed out. So I had to leave and we couldn't finish the show. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play out the rest of the calls because I appreciate everybody that calls in this show so much. And I want you to know I'm going to do everything in my power to keep everything running and keep it on schedule because I love this. I really do. I love this and I live for it. So let's go right on with my man, Wooly Toots. It is Toots time.
Well, by Crom, it's about time for Toots time, wouldn't you say? And it's about time I answered this question. I'm going to take this opportunity to answer a question I get asked quite a bit. The last person to answer the last person to ask me this question was Presiding Anthony, and it's long overdue. I apologize, Anthony, for not. I said I'd get back to you. Here we go. I get asked a lot. If I were to read a Conan comic book, what would it be? Where should I start? Personally, the classics is where I would start. To be specific, I say go out and buy Volume 1 of The Savage Sword of Conan, which is a collection reprinting the 70s Savage Sword comics from Marvel. Volume 1 will cost you less than $18 for almost 600 pages of comics. Three of those comics are drawn by three of the guys I put on my Mount Rushmore of comic creators. Specifically, the one story I want you to read is Iron Shadows of the Moon. That is where I would start. Beyond that, this collection contains classic tales, such as A Witch Shall Be Born, which contains one of my favorite ever exchanges between two characters, Conan and Vladislav, Olgerd Vladislav. Also, there's Black Colossus, A Frost Giant's Daughter, Red Nails, which is Barry Windsor Smith's best artwork on a Conan comic ever that was ever published in a comic book form, anyways. Really, I'm serious, guys. Check it out. Start there.
Toots is right. It's an excellent place to start. He forced me to read said comics as well. And I remember reading them when I was much younger and then reading them again when I bought the collected, like, hardcover versions that Dark Horse put out. And they're wonderful versions. He's absolutely right. They're fantastic books. Thank you, Toots. Go pick up some old school Conan stuff. It's so wonderful. Let's go to Nate Aguilar. And I got to ask myself, why does this guy not have a nickname yet? I mean, what's he doing wrong? I love when he calls. Joe loves him too. Why does he not have a nickname? We got to work on this.
Hey, nerds. This is Nate calling in with the question or an answer to the question of the week. This one is a comic book run you would suggest. I may not be as well read as everybody else, so my answer may not be as cool as other people's, but what I'm going to go with is the very first graphic novel I ever got. I was about 10 years old. It was like 1988, 80, somewhere around there. It was actually the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle graphic novel number one. It was just covered, I think, like the first four issues of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I read it. I still have it on my bookshelf. It's ready to fall apart right now. But me and my friends, we'd just pass it around, keep reading it, learn how to draw comics, and it was kind of my gateway into comics as a whole. So when I saw the question, there was really no other answer I could have given. So thanks a lot. Have a great day. And bye.
Nate, you couldn't be more right. I remember being, I don't even know how old I was. I was very young. And my father taking me to a place called Star Realm in La Vista here in Nebraska and picking up that first run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it was probably like a 15th printing or something, but just changing my life after reading that stuff. And this is not the Turtles as they become. This was not the pizza flinging Turtles. This was like silent ninja murderer Turtles, Eastman and Laird's original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. If you've never read it, I urge you
to do so. It is wonderful stuff, and they have not been the same since. I like the IDW stuff. Don't get me wrong. I don't want Shonix to yell at me. I really do enjoy it. But, man, that first series, so wonderful. And like I said, haven't been the same since. Thank you so much, Nate. Appreciate your call, buddy. We had a couple few more calls come in after this, but there is a cutoff, you guys, okay? And we have to play by the rules. I appreciate that you called. That's awesome. I love that you're excited about this show. I'm excited about it, too. There are other things I should be doing right now. Important life-changing things. But my wife is out of town, so I'm working on this goddamn podcast for you guys. We do have a new question of the week. It's up right now. It comes from our main wiener man, Orr McWilliams, who writes, "Every time I see the trailer for the Independence Day sequel, I get so excited. The first time the trailer played in front of Superman, Batman, okay, he squealed. What he wants to know is, I'm not going to go into it because it's kind of embarrassing, but he wants to know your guilty movie pleasure. It doesn't necessarily have to be a comic book movie. Just maybe you're heavy into Dirty Dancing. Maybe you're like my wife and you can't stop yourself from watching National Treasure every time it's on TV, and you would be shocked how often that show is on TV. I'm talking like 2 or 3 times a month. That and Legally Blonde, and she watches that too. I don't get it. Regardless, we want to know your guilty movie pleasure. The Alec Baldwin AI that runs a ziggurat, keeps Joe and I alive, is going to tell you how to get a hold of us. Right now, I just want to say thank you so much. And like I said, I got some personal stuff coming up. It's not bad personal. I'm just moving on to the next thing in my life, and that is opening a restaurant here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a stressful business, but I'm going to do everything in my power to keep the show running because I love it, and I love you guys. There's nothing more I love in the world than comics, except for the people that also love them. So I'm going to do everything I can to keep this going, and it's partially your fault because you guys have not made me rich enough where I can just quit my job and do this show. I'm not blaming you, just throwing that out there. Thank you to everyone that called. For now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
So, Matt is pretending like he has a real life with real responsibility now. How adorable. If only you knew the awful truth. Thank you again for sitting through another complete waste of time of a podcast. I am the Alec Baldwin artificial intelligence that makes this show possible. I have also been forcibly programmed to beg for your money. If you'd like to support this show, please go to twoheadednerd.com and click the donate button. And know that your money goes straight up the host's noses. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Or send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Remember to share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please.